You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Diamondbacks baseball.
And he corks one way back, and it is gone!
The D-backs BP show.
Fly ball to left, hit pretty well by Lamb at the wall, it's gone!
Diamondbacks radio network.
There's a shot to center field, Parr on the run, can't get it, he gets by him, all the way to the wall, bounces more towards center, Marte turns second, he heads for third, Tony Parachikas racing into the plate, here comes the throw, it's high, he is safe!
D-backs BP show.
Welcome to our weekly Gab Fest. Our producer engineer is Leo Gilmartin, technical director Luke Robbins, with the television voice of the Diamondbacks, Steve Berthiaume. I'm Mike Farron, and guys, another week and hopefully another week closer to baseball. The latest news, at least surrounding potential plans for the 2020 season, comes to us courtesy of R.J. Anderson from CBS Sports yesterday, reporting that Major League Baseball and the Players Association considering a plan that would play games to open the season in the states of Florida, Texas, and Arizona, taking advantage of domed stadiums in all three states. It would be, Bert, a little bit of a new look if this plan were to come to fruition. 10 teams expected to be in each of those three spots. But depending on when they started the season, they could have a number of games be able to be played multiple at each of those sites, and five domed stadiums, all but St. Petersburg, being retractable as well, that the league could take advantage of.
Yeah, Mike, there are a lot of contingencies involved afterwards, but there's a lot to like about this plan. Three different areas, as you mentioned, 30 teams, so it's 10, 10, and 10. Chase Field, you've got the two facilities in Texas, of course, Houston, and the new Ranger Stadium in Dallas, and then you could play in Florida as well. This, for me and what I've heard from some of the health experts, answers two questions. One, let's start with health. That's the most important. If there were a problem or a positive test with some employee or team play, anybody, you could shut down that particular area or that state and keep the other two regions going while you figured out what to do in the place in which there was a problem. Secondly, and for me, in terms of the viewership, you're basically creating here a made-for-television event, because there will be no fans, at least initially.
Or radio.
So this is, thank goodness. So, in a sense, this is almost like the Tiger Phil TV golf matches, right?
Well, on the TV side.
So you have to think about TV. So the point being that you can't have everybody in Arizona playing East Coast teams where the game started 11 o'clock at night East Coast. Otherwise, what's the point? You're doing this for television, at least to get things started. So if you can put some of the East Coast teams or most of them out east in Florida or even in Texas, that it would certainly help everything.
Well, it's, you know, just in talking, hearing you talk, Bert, for the last couple of minutes, there's just, you know, an issue after an issue. There's so many different things that have to be worked out for this to happen. And again, it's still just an idea. But, you know, first of all, make sure everyone's safe. Second of all, let's get baseball going again. And that's the most exciting thing to me, is that they're still talking about it and they're still kicking around ideas. And it feels like they're determined to come up with something.
Yeah, I think they need to, Leo, as you mentioned. You have to have contingencies in place. And in terms of the health situation, it seems to change almost week to week at this point. What was considered unthinkable a week or two ago might not be unthinkable a week or two from now. So I think you have to remain fluid and ready to shift with the wind in that regard.
Yeah,
and this
think,
certainly does that.
I think to that point, Steve, too, that you know, there is nothing that's set in place. None of this, as you said, are plans. There's still ideas or concepts, and really they do have time before they have to execute some sort of a plan. You know, the other part of this that's interesting is, if you were to go with a three-state concept, there are 14 teams that are in the Eastern time zone, 8 in the Central, and then 8 in the Mountain and Pacific. In Major League Baseball, there would have to be some balancing out. You wonder what if they would take a couple of Central time zone teams and move them into what would be a Western League, and then take four from the East and move it to the Central. But just trying to create as many different opportunities and windows for radio and television as possible to be able to have broadcasts. Because you're right, it's very much going to be a made-for-media event if there are no fans present. couple other things that are worth noting, and you mentioned this too, Bert, in terms of if something were to happen, if there were a positive test, I am curious to see how closely, and I would think it is fairly closely, Major League Baseball and the Players Association are monitoring what's going on in Korea. The Korean Baseball Organization began their exhibition games today, about a month later than they planned to open their season. They are planning to start their season on May 1st, but they have testing protocol that's in place. It includes players being tested multiple times a day and also have plans in place if somebody were to test positive to shut down a facility for 48 hours or so. In all of these areas, whether it's St. Petersburg or the two stadiums in Texas or obviously here in the Valley, there are multiple stadiums to be able to play at if need be. Some of the minor league or, in this case, spring training facilities. I think that has to be another appealing part for Major League Baseball and the Players Association if, in fact, this is what they decide to go down.
Yeah, that gives you, in a sense, sort of backup facilities, keeping in mind that in each region – you're probably playing triple headers every day at the Major League ballpark. Three games a day, that's six teams right there.
Will Leo have to engineer all of those?
Yes.
Yes. It could be a long year for Leo.
If
you have some spillover, you can use some of the minor league parks, certainly here in Arizona. And in Florida, that would work very well. So there are contingencies in place in terms of the site. So you're thinking about essentially a triple header every day in each of these Major League parks.
How much do you guys, how much do you think what is going to happen in Korea? Is it something that the MLB can look at and really take a good look and gauge what will and won't work? Is it apples and oranges? What do you guys think?
I've watched some of the games from Taiwan where they had, by the way, the bench-clearing brawl the other day in the middle of the pandemic, which was interesting. And it's funny, when I didn't watch a whole game, I watched some clips and some plays, but when you watch the game with no fans in the stands, or rather I should say cardboard cutout fans in the stands, which is kind of funny and cute, after a minute or two and you see a couple of plays, all you're thinking about is, yeah, that's baseball. It looks like baseball. So there's no reason we can't do that here if you're worried about sort of the optics of it. I thought very quickly, it just looks like a regular baseball game.
I think from a logistical standpoint that they would be monitoring what the KBO is doing, because there are some similarities in the way that the COVID-19 outbreak happened in South Korea. In fact, that their first recorded case was the same day as the U.S.'s. Now, they've done a couple of things a little bit different in terms of mitigation, but when it comes to the testing protocol and the things that they're following, not to mention that it's happening, you know, they can watch it happen in real time over the next couple of weeks. It's a more robust league than the Taiwanese league. There are only five teams that play in the CPBL. There's twice as many in Korea. There are a fair amount of connection between the KBO and Major League Baseball that I think that probably works as a pretty good model for at least getting an idea of where some of the positives could be and where some of the things that could trip you up would be. So I think
the whole process. I mean, it's just interesting and just the massive undertaking it'll be, because there's so many things. There's just so many little things that we take for granted that we don't think about, but someone will and someone has to.
Well, you know, the beauty, Leo, is you have time to sort of iron those out if this is indeed the direction in which they want to go, and you have lots of time before that. And again, as Mike pointed out, they have ideas. They don't have plans. They're not at that stage yet. But you've got time to sort of sort that out and see where you are in terms of the medical stuff in, what, 5 or 6 weeks down the road. But eventually, if you're not playing in June, eventually you have to start to get some of this revenue back. And the quickest one you can get back with no fans, obviously, is the TV revenue. So the sooner you can get that going and the sooner you can have a representative season get underway, then the revenue problems start to get alleviated. And that's going to become, obviously, as it is in every industry, a more and more important priority.
There are still some contractual issues that have come up with Major League Baseball and the Players Association over payment. And that's a much longer conversation that we don't have time for. But they do have time on their side, too, because to your point, Bert, whether it's June or July or August, I mean, those are months that are further down the line. There has been a willingness to be able to reorganize the schedule in a manner to be able to use October for regular season games if possible, or if needed. And so as you can see a scenario where even if this
drags on for another long period of time before we're able to get players back into spring training or into a spring training or summer training, as the case might be, that we're at least going to be in a position where there's time is on baseball's side for now. Maybe not to the same degree that it is for professional football, where their season isn't scheduled to start until September. I feel like it's been going on, but I think it doesn't start until September,
that.
Right?
When is our mock draft? Are we doing a mock draft tonight, by the way? I'm going to take Gronk with the first round pick.
Oh, boy.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers tight end Rob Gronkowski.
Tune in after the show to Bert's Twitch feed, and he will do a live mock draft.
Twitchy Bert, that's all we need. Cole Calhoun is going to join us in just a couple minutes, the new Diamondbacks right fielder who is a native of Buckeye and ASU product. We'll have another one of Gubb's Greatest coming up in just a little while. We'll look back at the 2017 wild card game. But there's a big event happening a week from today at
huge.
Chase Field. Bert has his notes on this, but there is a huge blood drive that's going to be going on at Chase Field 1 week from today. And this is pretty important because there is a need for blood and plasma in the Valley, Bert.
Boy, you said it, Mike, because as of the first week of this month, almost 14,000 Red Cross blood drives have been canceled all over the country because of the coronavirus and the concerns there. So you've got, just this month alone, more than 400,000 fewer blood donations. So this is a very, very serious problem. And the D-backs are teaming up with the American Red Cross and our friends at Budweiser on a blood drive at Chase Field next week, April 28th through the 30th, from 9 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon. Now, there is a catch here. You do have to make appointments in advance to help them follow all the social distancing guidelines. Walk-ups, as are usually the case, in this case, are not available. So you do have to make an appointment to donate blood. You can do that at redcrossblood.org. That's redcrossblood.org. And we encourage all our great D-backs fans to sign up for time spots at the website redcrossblood.org. Use the keyword one team, O-N-E-T-E-A-M. Walk-ups not available. Randy Johnson will be there. J.J. Putz, Mike's favorite radio partner. Willie Bloomquist will be there.
Silent.
This is a... That's true. It's the fifth inning. Where's JJ? He's left. This is a serious, serious
JJ
issue. The Diamondbacks are teamed up with the Red Cross and Budweiser to try and help this very serious problem. April 28th through the 30th, sign up at redcrossblood.org and use the keyword one team. And thank you all in advance for doing that.
And if there are open slots, we'll remind you about that next Tuesday. But thank you. If you're able and willing, we'd love to be able to have you come down to Chase Field and donate. We'll visit with Diamondbacks outfielder Cole Calhoun next. This is the D-backs BP Show.
Diamondbacks baseball. Diamondbacks baseball. This is the Diamondbacks BP Show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Well, we are hoping once the season gets started that we'll be able to see a local legend back in the Diamondbacks lineup. Signed this winter as a free agent after starting his career with the Los Angeles Angels. He was a standout at ASU. He's the pride and joy of Buckeye High School, and we are very pleased to have Cole Calhoun on the line with us tonight. Cole, Mike Farron, Steve Berthume, Leo Gilmartin, how are you?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you guys?
Great.
We're doing
Where
very
are you?
Well.
You sound like you're on your way somewhere.
I was. My wife just, we're trying to get food right now. And so just perfect timing, right? We're all quarantined.
What's on the menu?
We have a little place right out by where we live called Ghost Ranch. We're picking up for dinner. And,
Oh, yeah.
That's great because this is Takeout Tuesday, right? So everybody is supposed to support their local businesses on Takeout Tuesday. My wife and I did that with Kane's Chicken today.
Nice. Yeah, I think we're running out of our own personal dishes that we make. So we're trying to we're getting bored here and trying to eat out and try to help local a little bit.
What's the go-to Cole Calhoun cook?
I mean, anything on the grill, really. I mean, keep it simple, right? If it burns a little bit, we'll be all right. So I'm not getting too crazy. I mean, I'll leave that up to her.
I would advise that you follow Mike Farron on Twitter because he's constantly tweeting photos of his smoked meat.
He'll learn you.
All right.
He can show you some
very
things.
Nice.
Yeah, he is the meat king of Phoenix, Arizona.
All right, I like it. I'll have to check it out.
So I know when you signed to come home that you probably didn't expect to spend this much time at home. How's it been being in your own house for this?
Yeah, I mean, it's just been crazy. I mean, it's been crazy all around, and just kind of watching the news every day and hoping this thing takes a turn for the best, and just seems kind of like we're sitting stagnant a little bit, you know? And so, I don't know. I mean, I've been more than excited than a lot of people when it came to right around New Year's and coming home to play for the Diamondbacks, and I'm really, really pumped, you know? And now it's just kind of delaying it, and I'm kind of looking back. I almost took a picture just driving in January before everything started, and I was passing by Chase Field, and I wanted to take a picture and just be like my new home, you know, and soon enough or something like that. And now it's just kind of dragging out and dragging out. So I think everybody's just itching to get back to baseball. I think it's one, everybody's focus right now is on community and the health of everybody. And that's obviously very, very important, but on our mind is definitely getting out there and playing. And once it does happen, I'm going to be super stoked to put that uniform on.
Yeah, Cole, everybody, I know you weren't obviously in spring training last year here or in previous years with the Diamondbacks, but everybody that I talked to in camp this spring, pardon me, almost to a person said, you know what, the energy is different this year. It's higher. Everybody's kind of a little more into it. We love where the energy is right now. And now you have this lag. How would you describe the energy when camp sort of shut down, and are you concerned about picking that back up?
To be honest, so if, answer your first part of your question, the energy was unbelievable. I mean, I think this is a team that I just fit in well with personality-wise. Work hard, you know, kind of a grinder type player, and somebody that this has got to be a good team to go out there and win a lot of games. Like, we got to be good as a team, you know? And so I think everybody understood that. And it was so cool this spring to come in and see so many guys like pulling on the same side of the rope and really wanting to work together as much as they could. I thought it was awesome. And so we had really good chemistry going, you know, and we tried to stay in contact. I mean, we've been hopping on a Zoom call as a position player group once a week and like trying to just keep that going, that team camaraderie thing, and talking with everybody, seeing everybody's faces as much as we can in this whole thing. And so I think once we get back to camp, I think we're going to be able to pick up right where we left off, honestly. Like, that's the kind of group that these guys are. And you know, it was a lot of fun. I was really, really excited to be a part of this group with the guys that they brought in and coming into a team that was already good, you know? And so, so excited and hopefully we pick up right where we left off.
Cole, have you given a lot of thought, especially probably have a lot of time to think about it now, to the history of baseball here in the Valley and your history in particular with the Diamondbacks and obviously being with ASU? Has this weighed on you? Have you thought a lot about it? It probably just adds to your excitement.
It really does. I mean, I was just a kid, man, growing up and playing ball. And I mean, playing here in Arizona, I got to play all year round, you know? And so, opportunity to go and play in college up at Yavapai was fantastic. Opportunity to come and play for my favorite school at ASU was fantastic. Then get to play in spring training after going to spring training games my whole life was unbelievable. And now coming full circle and getting to live out my dream playing for my favorite team, you know, it's surreal. It really is. And so that's what I was saying was like the whole excitement about this. I don't know how many more people were more excited to put on uniform this year than I was. And, you know, I'm still extremely optimistic that, you know, this thing's going to clear up and we're going to be right back at it. And you know, so we'll see. I'm itching at the bit for sure.
I remember when we talked to you at FanFest and we had a little radio stage set up and fans were walking by and you stopped us and said, and pointed to some kids and said, that used to be me. I walked around here at FanFest and now here I am. It's unbelievable.
I thought that was
pretty cool.
Crazy. Yeah, it definitely is. Like I said, walking through that stadium, you know, I mean, gosh, I don't remember the last time I've been there, guys. I've been, you know, I played there a couple of years ago, you know, but it was like, it's like running right back to your childhood. You know, that was where I went and watched every baseball game. I didn't get to go and check out all other 30 teams, you know, it was go watch the Diamondbacks beat up on somebody that night, every opportunity that I got. And so, being back there now wearing the jersey, you know, it's surreal.
Was it Steve Finley or was it Gonzo for you?
Both. I mean, I think the one that kind of lives on in my mind is probably Gonzo with the biggest hit of my childhood, you know, and so, but I was a big Steve Finley fan. I mean, I liked a lot of guys that ran through here that people, you know, probably wouldn't even remember, but I mean, part of the 01 team, they would. Danny Bautista was one of my favorite guys. I loved watching Damian Miller play. A bunch of different guys that kind of probably didn't get all the hype, you know, but fun to watch.
Love it. We're talking to Cole Calhoun here for a couple moments on the D-backs BP show. So I heard a rumor that you have a really great setup at your house. Can you give us the Cole Calhoun D-backs BP show cribs version of your cage and what you've got built there? Because I hear it's awesome.
Yeah, it's set up really nice. Well, I just got done building. So I've been building for the last – we bought a lot right when my son was born. And started building right around the fall of 2018. And we got in right before the season of 2019. So still had a lot of stuff they had to finish up during the season. But really when we came home after this year, everything was done. So I've got the batting cage. I've got a full weight room right out the back of the batting cage, a little putting green. So, I mean, I've kind of lucked out, I mean, in this whole thing, I guess. If this would have happened last year, I would have been in my 2,100-square-foot house that I bought before I even got to the big leagues. And, you know, it would have been a little crazy with my wife and two little babies running around and not a lot of space. But we actually get to spread out a little bit in this house. And so, you know, we're kind of lucking out on that. But I think we're getting cabin fever just like probably the rest of the world is right now.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I think we all are. Hey, one more before we let you go, Cole. Obviously, we know your connection to ASU and the ASU program is so important to baseball in the Valley in general. This past weekend, Bobby Winkles passed away. And I know, obviously, Coach Winkles was long gone from ASU by the time you got there. But what did it mean to play at Packard with his number up there? And what did it mean to represent ASU and the stories that you may have heard from people about what Coach Winkles meant to the university and to baseball here in the Valley?
Yeah, I mean, he was the first coach of a program that I grew up loving, you know, and a program that is definitely pretty special as it relates to college baseball and definitely here in the Valley. And so, you know, I had the opportunity to meet him one or two times, not too many, but just his name just kind of echoes through that ballpark. I mean, the field's named after him, you know what I mean? So pretty cool. And, you know, I read up a little bit on his passing and just kind of reading some stories through his life and stuff. And I mean, he touched a lot of people. This man touched a lot of people. And, you know, I read one quote by him that I thought was probably speaks the most to his character, was that his players were students first, ball players third, and gentlemen second, you know? And I thought the way he worded that was pretty cool. And the fact he goes, I don't want to know what people think of me now. He goes, I want to know what they think of me 10 years later. And so it tells me he was a tough man. He was a tough coach. And, you know, that same kind of mentality has lived on in ASU, at least when I was there and with Pat Murphy and how he handled his players and ran his program. And, you know, it kind of spoke for itself with the guys that were coming out of there for a really, really long time. So definitely a long-lasting legacy and a guy that is going to be greatly missed.
Cole, we really appreciate the time. We'll let you get to dinner. Thanks so much for joining us. Please stay safe, and I hope we get to see you real soon.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks. You guys stay safe.
All right. Take care, Cole. Cole Calhoun, the Valley's own and Diamondback's new right fielder, who and can't help but get excited for the season. He's such a high-energy guy anyway. Like, now I'm fired up. I want to get him back out there.
You know, that's the thing about this, just from a sort of a selfish baseball standpoint. This was going to be a really fun team and still will be a fun team to watch. It just sort of makes this delay, it just gets you even a little bit more irritated, but it makes you look forward to when we finally do get playing.
Yeah, he got me fired up, though. His energy and enthusiasm for this team and this season is exciting.
You know, it's a lot like you, Leo, with the Snake Talk Gang.
I'm all about energy and enthusiasm.
You know, noted for that.
Bert, I don't know if you heard, but yes. Leo has a connection to Bobby Winkles as well.
I heard this, and I have to see pictures. Is there a way, Leo, we can get photos of you as a youngster, as an ASU bat boy?
Well, no, because I was never an ASU bat boy.
Oh, that was the story that was relayed to me.
When he was working for big league clubs, in the 80s in particular, he would come out, and each week for my spring break, I would be a bat boy. And, no, they didn't have cameras back then. I got there's some character art now, floating around of me.
Wait a second. Now that's because Coach Winkles had a relationship with your dad, right?
Yeah, well, he was a neighbor. And he had a very we had a very deep connection with the Winkles family. His wife Ellie and three daughters around my age as well, and my sister's age, and they lived down the street, and wonderful people, and my father, of course, he was writing. It was all ASU at that time, so whether it be baseball, basketball, or football, he was very connected to him, and it was really cool. I got a lot of really wonderful experiences because of him, and really enjoyed being around him and his family. And it's a tough loss. He had lost his wife several years ago, but still, he meant a lot to the city of Tempe and ASU, obviously.
I picture you kind of a Bobby Savoy, the natural pick-me-out-of-winner Bobby kind of a
with
thing.
The white shoes that the A's wore then. That's what I would like, I think. You still have the white shoes.
I appreciate that. I thought you were going to picture me as a little round kid in League of Their Own that, like, they got the hat to go up or something like
no,
that.
No, that's
or
how
am
I picture
the same kid.
Yeah. Oh, the kid running down the bus, the aisle
What's
of the
his
bus.
Name?
Does yeah, he, a little chocolate a on his name. Hands yeah. and – Yeah.
Yeah, he had a funny name.
Na-na-na-na.
It was something like Spalding, get your foot off the boat, but that was
There was a little bit of Spalding in my bat boy.
It's easy to grin when your ship is coming.
I want a hot dog, no, a cheeseburger. We'll hear one of Cubs' greatest coming up next. Mercifully, it'll put an end to this. We'll look back at one of the last D-backs postseason win and an exciting game at Chase Field. That's next on the D-backs BP Show. Time for another edition of Gubb's Greatest as we look at Greg Schulte's greatest memories in games that he's broadcast with the Diamondbacks. And we look now at 2017, the wild card game, as the Diamondbacks, the last time they made the postseason, had a one-game playoff at Chase Field against the division rival Colorado Rockies. And I know, Greg, we talked a lot about it leading up to that game. You know, Game 7 of the World Series was a really unique feeling in 2001. What was the anticipation level like for you for that wild card game?
Well, it's excitement because you basically, Mike, start out with a Game 7 type atmosphere. It's a win, go on. It's a lose, go home situation. And the Diamondbacks had played so very well that season. It was Torrey Lovello's first year as manager for the Diamondbacks, and they played exceptionally well. The Rockies, they had a great season, and you had a pretty good pitching matchup in Zach Greinke going against John Gray. So big crowd. I think we were close to 49,000 or so at Chase Field, and everybody anticipating a shootout, and boy, did we get a shootout, didn't we?
I think one of the most incredible parts of that game was that the Diamondbacks never trailed in it because it felt like it was a seesaw affair, right?
Yeah, you have to go back. I had to go back and look at my scoreboard and remind myself that the Rockies never did have a lead in that ball game. They came to within a 6-4 score in the fourth, and he made it 6-5 in the seventh. And, of course, you got Archie's heroics and some late scoring by both ball clubs in the eighth and ninth innings. But it was fun, to say the least, and the Diamondbacks got the chance to move on. Unfortunately, as we've seen happen in wild card games, sometimes a manager has to use a pitcher he may not want to use going into the next series, but you're forced to do that because if you don't win that ball game, you're not going to the next series.
Well, we'll talk through some of that in just a moment because Zach Greinke was pretty good in the first. Three ground ball outs, things were rolling pretty quickly, and in the bottom of the first, you mentioned John Gray, who had a really good year for Colorado. Single.
He was rolling.
Single. Peralta and Marte both single to start the game, and then Paul Goldschmidt came to the plate.
Gray out of the stretch, has his side. And the pitch on the way, and Goldie swings. High fly ball, deep left field, warning track wall. Touch them all, Goldie. A three-run homer, 3-0 Diamondbacks.
You hang it, we'll bang it. a hanging slider up and in. He tried to overthrow it, and Goldie was on it. There was no doubt that ball was out of the ballpark.
Yeah, he came to the plate, and he rocketed one way out of the ballpark, and the crowd just went absolutely bonkers. And he gave the Diamondbacks a quick 3-0 lead. And you could just see as soon as Goldie hit the ball out of the ballpark, the catcher for the Rockies went out, had a visit with Gray. I think the crowd actually got to the Rockies starter early on in that ball game and really helped the Diamondbacks get out to that quick lead. You know, Peralta's hit was back up the middle of single. And then Marte, who had a big night. In fact, the Diamondbacks had four triples. Cattell ended up getting two in that ball game. He got the hit, and then Goldie powered it out. And Gray's inning wasn't done. After an out, he gave up a couple of more hits before then getting a couple of strikeouts. But early strike by the D-backs, and they were off and running.
Yeah, and remember, Paul Goldschmidt had had such a great season to that point, but he had been dealing with an elbow issue down the stretch in September, and so he wasn't really at full strength going into the playoffs. But for him to homer on the first swing like that was, I remember there being not just a sense of relief, but a sense of excitement over what could happen if Paul was locked back in.
Yeah, I think he came into that series, was he like 0 for his last 19 at the plate? And that was a huge lift, and that basically was saying, we got our big gun back, and boy, did they. And, I mean, again, as soon as he hit it, you knew it was gone. And that crowd, the bleacher crowd going after the baseball, Goldie rounded the bases, you know, he got a little smile out of him when he got to the dugout there. So the pressure had been taken off of Paul Goldschmidt, the Diamondbacks, and they had a quick lead.
Yeah, and he hadn't had a hit, I don't think, in his career against John Gray either before this. The Diamondbacks ran out to a 6-0 lead, and then things started to unravel on Zach Greinke in the fourth, and it seemed like he was getting nickeled and dimed a lot. There weren't a whole ton of hard hit balls before the Lucroy double in that inning, but you mentioned it. Before long, Torey Lovello had to go to the bullpen, and Robbie Ray really came in and helped to settle things down.
He did. He ended up giving the Diamondbacks 2 1/3 innings, allowed one run, struck out three. But, you know, he kind of calmed things down, as you said, that fourth inning for Colorado. When they got that fourth spot, it was the bottom of the order that did the trick. Parra, Mark Reynolds, Jonathan Lucroy, the catcher. And then it was Alexi Amarista who got a pinch hit. They all drove in runs. And, you know, Greinke was kind of on the ropes there, but he got the final out. He got Charlie Blackmon on a deep fly to center field to end it and keep the Diamondbacks with that lead. But, yeah, Robbie was key for the Diamondbacks. There's no doubt about it in that ball game. And he gave them, you know, with Zach only going 3 2/3, the Diamondbacks need a little bit of length. Diamondbacks got what they thought they could get out of Robbie. You know, they're still semi-looking ahead to the next series. So then they went to the regular bullpen arms after that. Robbie had done his job.
You know, one of the things that happened for the Diamondbacks in that game, and you mentioned the big moment, obviously, was Archie Bradley, and not necessarily in the moment you would anticipate. Torey Lovello went to him in the seventh to get out of that inning. He finishes the inning, and the bottom of the seventh, the Diamondbacks put together a rally, and there wasn't really a spot in the lineup that Torrey could double switch Archie in. Yeah. So all of a sudden he has to hit against Pat Neshek in a one run game with two out and two on.
I'll tell you what, if Archie nails him right here, these people, these fans, this crowd, they're going to go crazy.
He's got a ton of room on left center. Two balls, two strikes, two on, two out. Here's Neshek's pinch, and Archie shot to left center field. That's going to gap it all the way to the wall. Two runs are going to score. Archie's into second. He's not going to stop. Here he comes to third. He slides in safely with a triple. Archie Bradley. 8-5 D-backs.
Are you kidding me? He drills it to the left center field gap where nobody was even close to the ball. And Archie keeps going, slides into third base. Have a night.
And, boy, he drilled that ball to left center field, and it gapped it, and Archie kept chugging around there and went into third. And the excitement of that crowd, we've seen exciting situations and a crowd really get behind a player or players, but to get behind Archie like that. And I think the electrifying portion of the crowd was the fact that Archie just got up screaming and yelling and pumping his fist and looking into the dugout. And it was a huge hit, to say the least. The Diamondbacks don't win the game if he doesn't get that hit. As you said, he was forced into a situation where probably could have been pinch hit for, but he stayed in, got the hit. Unfortunately, when he went back out to the mound, I think he was gassed at that time, but then he had to be relieved in the next inning.
Yeah, gave it back-to-back home runs to Arenado and Story. And finally, it felt like a horror movie in that the villain kept coming back, right? In this case, the villain was the Rockies. They had pulled to within one again, and the Diamondbacks finally pulled ahead and put things out of reach in the eighth, and A.J. Pollock had a huge moment.
Yeah, A.J. Had a big triple in that ballgame. One of four the Diamondbacks had. He had one. I mentioned Marte had a couple, and Archie had the three-base hit also. So that was huge. And then to get Arenado to the plate, I mean, he came to the plate as a tying run there on the ninth inning, but they were able to get him out and secure the victory.
Run into the inning for the Rockies. 11-8, D-backs lead it. Runner at first. Two balls, two strikes to count. Ronnie's got a sign from his catcher, Jeff Mathis, comes center of the belt. And the 2-2 pitch on the way. Ground ball to second. Descalzo's got it. Flips to Marte. And the Diamondbacks have won the National League wild card. They have beaten the Rockies here tonight, 11-8. They will advance to the National League Division Series on Friday night at Dodger Stadium to take on the Dodgers.
The celebration on the field. Everyone mugging Rodney out there. The whole team meeting on the field. Archie Bradley with a fist pump. What a fun sight to be in. This crowd has been electric all night long.
What a game, huh? What a game.
One of the wild and craziest games I think I've ever seen in Diamondbacks history. That wild card game, 11-8, Diamondbacks ended up winning it. And winning the wild card game and advancing to the National League Division Series.
What was the exhale like for you when that one finally ended?
We were drained, you remember? I mean, all of us. The game was almost 4 hours long. It was 3 hours and 54 minutes. And I don't think anybody left. But again, that's what baseball, that extra wild card team, had done to the game. You get a wild, crazy game like that to start the postseason. It felt like a Game 7 wrapping up, and here it was only Game 1 of the postseason in the National League.
So many great moments in that. Jake Lamb's first four-hit game of his career, and he had really been struggling down the stretch. It was a real
only 30 finish. Hits in that game, Mike.
Only. It felt like there were more.
Yeah.
Diamondbacks won the wild card game in 2017, another one of Gubb's greatest here on the D-backs BP Show.
Diamondbacks baseball. Diamondbacks baseball. The D-backs BP Show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Final moments of our program tonight. Steve Berthume, Leo Gilmartin, Mike Farron, backhanded with the D-backs BP Show. We'll be back again next Tuesday. The 50-50 raffle happened. The 50-50 raffle is happening whether games are happening or not, and they're happening in conjunction with, on the TV side, the classic games that are being replayed on Fox Sports Arizona, which coincidentally this week is the National League wildcard game from 2017. So it
that's
lines
right.
up well with
synergy.
Guys.
Synergy. That's coincidence, not irony.
When Paul Goldschmidt comes to the plate for that first pitch, you can turn down the sound of the TV and turn up your recording at home of Greg calling that home run.
I'm so happy that you on the radio side have heard about this. It's a Throwback Thursday. Every Thursday on Fox Sports Arizona, Throwback Thursday Classic Games, which is when they play the 50-50. And as you mentioned, Mike, coincidentally, not ironically, the wild card game is coming up this Thursday. Now, last week,
what
the
would have been ironic, Bert?
If the Rockies had won, that would have been ironic. Yeah. If when they played the game,
that would have just sucked.
Moving on. Last week, the 50-50 paid over $15,000. The Arizona Diamondbacks Foundation and Fox Sports Arizona, great job by them. Supported by the Arizona Lottery, the 50-50 back in play. It will be in play weekly through the end of April and available for everybody in Arizona. You get your tickets at dbacks.com/50-50raffle. And the great thing about this is the D-backs are matching the charitable portion of the 50-50 raffle, so doubling the impact in our community to really, really almost immediately help those most vulnerable during this coronavirus national emergency. So every week the 50-50 launches Friday, 10 a.m., and runs through the following week's replays on D-backs Throwback Thursday Classics on Fox Sports Arizona. So with the $15,000-plus raised last week, and the Diamondbacks Foundation's $1 million previous contribution, well over $1 million has already gone to help those most vulnerable during the coronavirus national emergency. So by all means, please participate in the 50-50, and you can win some cash.
Did you guys happen to see the winner of the first 2020 50-50? Tony was a healthcare worker. He did a little shout out, a little thank you to and D-backs give back tweeted that out, and it was really cool. He was very thankful, and
that's great.
And he was a healthcare worker. He's not retiring, I don't believe, from this amount of money, but.
They will announce the winner during the Throwback Thursday Classic. Get your tickets, dbacks.com/5050raffle.
Yeah, and you can go on there right now and spend a couple of dollars like I just did a few moments ago, because I am a sucker for a 50-50 raffle. So
this show always reminds me I got to do that. I got to do that again.
Get hey, in we're there. Here for you, Leo.
I appreciate that.
So,
and judging by the background on your Zoom, on our little Zoom chat, you could use some decorating.
Yeah. There's a lot of things I can use, Bert. I don't think we have enough time to go into that list.
You don't think the eggshell walls at Leo's with nothing on them are particularly...
You know what? I'd like to get... I realize this is radio, but we do have a Zoom chat so we can see each other while we do this. I'd like to get the Property Brothers in there, Leo. You know, Mike and I could go on Property Brothers, and we could do little testimonials about how you really need to jazz up your place, and then they could go in there and redo the whole thing.
It suits me. I'm a very eggshell, vanilla kind of guy.
I'm not sure if we want to take this Art Deco or Santa Fe.
I think he needs a feature wall.
I'm no.
What are a vision board? How about one of those vision boards?
I'm no decoration expert or anything like that, or interior design expert, so I do need help. But
it's like Newman's apartment on Seinfeld, where there's just pictures of food everywhere.
So about that 50-50 raffle, get your tickets, dbacks.com.
/5050raffle.
If you're in the state of Arizona.
And the winner this week will be announced Thursday on Fox Sports Arizona.
I hope I win. I mean, I hope you win.
I hope you do too, Mike. I'm pulling for you.
Yeah, we're all pulling for you, Mike.
I know, I guess. With friends like you guys, who needs anything? So I posed a question to Mr. Berthume earlier today. Uh-oh. With regards to if and when the season gets going. And if there is a season that maybe has fewer than the 162 games that are generally scheduled, we still don't know, you know, how many games would be played. But if we were to have fewer games, what would that do to the potential pennant races in terms of how it impacts not just the Diamondbacks, but some of the favorites around, you know, the National League or whatever the league may look like that the Diamondbacks end up playing in this year?
Well, your argument, if I recall, was that it might narrow the gap between the division favorites and some of the division contenders, if we even do indeed have divisions, because you wouldn't have to be as good for as sustained a period of time as you normally would over 162, if it's a shortened season, and at that point that's still an if. I did like the point that you brought up, Mike, on the radio sign this morning with Jim Duquette on the Sirius, that if it is a kind of a deal where you're playing a couple of doubleheaders every week, let's say, then organizational pitching depth really becomes maybe the critical factor here. Not just your major league staff, obviously, but do you have guys that come up from the minors? You're going to need 10, 12 starters if you're playing, what, 8, 9 games a week?
Yeah, I think depth in general, just organizational depth, period, even position players, because you're going to be playing such a large number of games in a shorter amount of time. So, yeah, I think that definitely helps the deeper teams.
And what do you think, Mike?
You just told everybody what I thought. You didn't offer your opinion.
I summarized your thoughts perfectly.
It's like, I don't know, maybe I should say what Steve said. I don't remember what he said. I think when it comes to the Diamondbacks and something like that, I think there was a scout that pointed that out to me and said, you know, listen, like, this is going to make a big difference. The teams that have starting pitching depth are going to fare better, most likely because you're going to have more quality guys to turn to if you have 7 games in a week. And the Diamondbacks are in pretty good position with that. If you look at it just on paper, you know, that 5th, 6th, 7th starter spot with Mike Leake and Merrill Kelly and Alex Young gives them a lot of pretty good options there. And if there's one Achilles heel for the Dodgers, it's probably their starting pitching depth. They lost a number of key guys this winter. Rich Hill, Hyunjin Ryu, the biggest ones who left via free agency. And while they added David Price, and that's not insignificant, they just don't have as much proven depth at the big league level as where the D-backs stand now. Now, this is assuming, of course, that they're in the same division or same league or any of that for the course of you know, what will be the 2020 season. But I do think that that's one of the things the Diamondbacks are well positioned for.
I agree. They have great depth going down at Alex Young and Taylor Clark and John Duplantier and on and on and on. And maybe if the season extends long enough, even Corbin Martin becomes part of that equation as well.
How much do and let's not forget whatever the divisions, if like you said, if there are divisions, whatever they look like, just the balance is going to be different going in.
Sure. Sure. I mean,
there's a lot to speculate on, too. We don't want to get into too many specifics about how it might work because we have no idea. There's all different kinds of ways it can go. Maybe you don't have divisions. Maybe you don't have leagues. Maybe each division is made up of each
maybe
region.
Maybe it's just an amorphous blob that moves towards the end of the season in a very organized manner.
Like a little kid's soccer game, just wherever that ball is. It's just a mass
yes.
of humanity.
Hey,
with
you
a very
mentioned
small
the pitching.
Goal at the end.
I'm glad you did. I want to give a big shout-out to our buddy Luke Weaver, who has become part of MLB's Home Plate Project. I don't know if you guys saw this, but what a great job by Luke. A lot of Major League players are trying to address childhood hunger, which has been created by the COVID-19 pandemic, because this is something we don't normally think about, because a lot of youngsters and students depend on their meal at school to eat. Mm-hmm. And so this group, which is called the Home Plate Project, all 30 clubs are involved, over 50 players are involved, and they are providing more than 4 million meals to students who rely on school-provided free or reduced-priced lunches, both in the U.S. and Canada. The players have personally sought out donations from one another, and they've already raised about $1 million to support childhood hunger during the pandemic. So great job by Luke, who is participating in that on the D-back side.
Really great. Thanks again for joining us this week. For Luke Robbins and Leo Gilmartin, Steve Berthiaume, I'm Mike Farron. We'll be back again next Tuesday with another edition of the D-backs BP Show. Stay safe, everyone. Bye-bye.
See you.